world, here I am now, baby. I've got everything I want. I've got women, I've got whiskey, I've got wine, I've got song. Yes, it's true what they say, baby.
Hey everybody, Peter Hodson here. I hope you enjoyed the Zach Wilde interview the other day. It's always fun to talk to that guy. And as promised, here's another episode this week. Like I said, I'm trying to make these a bit more frequent and, you know, cover a lot of different ground. So, first things first, though, check out the site today. I have an exclusive premiere of a playthrough video of the track Pharaoh by guitarist Gavin Kennedy. Gavin's a great player. His album was co-produced with Nolly from Periphery, and it's full of real guitar tones through real amps, and amazing playing, amazing production. And yeah, if you check out the site, you will see an exclusive playthrough video there. And I'm going to have Gavin on the podcast pretty soon to talk about the record. But today's episode is with Ian Moss. Now, Aussies know Mossy as the guitar player from Cold Chisel, as well as a great solo artist in his own right. He has a really kind of sweet bluesy guitar style, and his vocals are incredible, and you can hear him in the background right now. But his new album, self-titled Ian Moss, is out today, and we did this interview just last night on relatively short notice, and you know, we had a great chat, but we only had a small amount of time to talk, so we are going to have another chat in a few months. He's hitting the road for a really extensive Australian tour that has a few legs, including a regional Australian leg of the tour with just an acoustic presentation. So that should be really cool. But yeah, we're going to have him on again in a few months to kind of talk more extensively. There's a lot more I wish I could have asked him if I had the time. So I hope you dig that when it happens. But here's this chat. He's known as kind of a shy guy, but you'll notice that as the chat goes on and we start to, you know, really get into the guitar talk, he really opens up, and you know, it's a really fun chat, and I can't wait to get more time with him to kind of, you know, really further explore some of this stuff. So here we go, Ian Moss. Yeah, so I've been listening to the record and really enjoying it, and the first thing that came to mind was the second I heard you playing, like, it's undoubtable who it is. You know, you have such a distinctive style that you just need to hear a couple of notes.
Oh, okay.
So, I was wondering, I noticed this record was recorded in a bunch of different locations. How did it come together? Over what kind of period of time were you doing this?
Look, I guess it kind of started, I guess, you know, I knuckled down and said, okay, I'm going to make a record in, say, August 2014, when I went to Nashville, at the invitation of Australian producer and songwriter Sam Hawksley. So I took a bunch of sort of ideas, half finished things, or whatever, or three quarter finished things, there, and got stuck into writing. It went really well. Kind of started to do some recording there, but pretty much ran out of time. Plus, I still, I guess I'd had everything written, but still wasn't happy with arrangements. You can write, you can do a lot of great writing, but then after that, arrangement is king. So I came back to Australia, nutting my brains out, trying to find someone who thought he's got a really good ear for that, and ended up with Peter Walker, who produced the very first Cold Chisel album. Guitarist, producer Peter Walker. I should say guitarist, producer, propeller head Peter Walker. So Yeah, no, it was just this kind of slow process. A bit of some kind of stops and starts. I think we... The first official recording was started at Rancom Street Studios down at Botany in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Where else? I would have done the whole lot there if I could have, but just scheduling and then... or lack of scheduling. Man, I had to go dig out a couple other places. There was a free energy device.
Mm.
I did some work there. You'd have to tell me where else.
Oh, there's a whole bunch in there.
I don't have the album cover in front of me. I know it's all on there.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned Nashville, because a lot of people I've interviewed lately have said they've gone to Nashville to record or to write, you know, specifically for the experience of being there and for what it kind of lends to the music. Do you find that when you're writing in Nashville or working in Nashville, that Nashville creeps into what you're doing?
I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, I haven't mentioned that over the past few years. I went to Nashville to write some songs for a new album. Oh, you're doing a bluegrass album. you're doing a country album.
Mm.
It's like, scratch your head at first and then, I suppose it's traditional, bluegrass country. It's definitely been associated with Nashville. I don't know, they're still pretty strong, that style of music there, that's for sure. But, I think the only song you could say that might have hints of that is a song called Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the bulk of that I'd written before I went anywhere near Nashville.
Yeah.
Nashville was one of the sort of three-quarter jobs, three-quarter finishing kind of jobs.
Hmm.
I think it's just a tense, a bigger place. It's pretty cheap to live there. It's a great environment. So much great live music. It just tends to be a place where songwriters of all styles have gravitated to.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of like Los Angeles session guitarists and stuff have moved over to Nashville because that's where the work is now. Like, not just country, but like that's where the work is.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, what's the Music Row or Batavia? There's an area there with just a little city of studios.
Yeah,
and there's probably a ton of session work there. You know, in LA, I think that was bloody hard going a long, long time ago. The studios spread out from asshole to breakfast. And, and bugger all work.
Yeah. So being a guitar geek, I've got to ask you some guitar questions. The first of which is, I noticed on the cover of the record, you've got a beautiful Strat with the reverse bridge pickup in the Hendrix configuration. What can you tell me about that guitar?
Look, that's not that old a guitar. It's an Eric Johnson.
Oh, nice.
Fender reissue. I got that back in about 2011, I think,
mm-hmm.
from... 2011 for the Cold Chisel Life and Nitro tour just before that. I've always loved that. I've loved that. I think they called Tobacco Burst, that two-tone kind of thing, and love the look of it. Just great sounding pickups and great chunky neck and relatively high radius, sort of 12-inch radius kind of stuff.
Mm.
So which is more, getting a little flatter than a lot of Strats can be.
Yeah, I got to have breakfast with Eric a few weeks ago at the NAMM show in California, and like he was presenting his new Strat to the media, and it's basically that same guitar but a semi hollow body, so it's got the F hole and stuff, but instead of a lot of the time Fender's made F-hole Strats, but they're like full thickness, kind of boxy things. Whereas in this case, they finally found a way to do like the proper contouring and everything and just keep it shaped like a Strat, but just have it semi-hollow. And yeah, so Eric was like presenting that guitar so we could all check it out and play it for him, which is, you know, standing there with Eric Johnson playing his guitar for him is pretty scary.
Yeah, I'd imagine too. The guy's frightening. But I'm very, curious about that guitar. I've kind of wanted to get back to the hollow body or semi hollow body for a while. So I'll be looking into that one myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's really
For me with the. You go.
I was going to say this one is like it's still noticeably a Strat, but it has this kind of sweetness to the high end and a little bit of mid range honk. You know that. Really gives you that hollow body vibe, and you know, it's—I mean, for me, it's one of my favorite Strats I've ever played. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I'll definitely be hassling a Clay Elgin, the Fender, for a bit of a go on one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the reverse pickup thing—that's just something I started doing way back in. Way back. Possibly early Chisel days, which just came about. Actually, the whole idea of doing that came about way back even earlier than that. When this Gibson 335, I got an early 1962 Gibson 335, where I don't know why I did it. I got an idea, or just I thought of it myself, or saw someone else, but. 335, the rear pickup seems to be a little closer to the bridge than other Gibsons, so there's less vibration back there. So I reversed, turned around one day, and suddenly I was getting so much more gain. I'm still very trebly, a whole lot more gain. And I was loving that until that pickup died, and I've never found it. Never really sort of found a proper replacement for it.
Yeah.
I will one day. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing, and then that was thinking, well, maybe, you know, Hendrix with Strats, because they can be pretty, with that, you know, Strats are pretty sharp and bright as it is, so that was my thinking, to get the pickup just a little further away from the bridge by Hendrixizing it.
Yeah. And especially if you're not using, you know, stupidly high amounts of distortion, every little change you make, you know, makes a huge difference. You know, if you're playing through like a plexi or something and, you know, you angle that pickup, you're really going to notice it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's reasonably just, I think it does make a difference, yeah.
Hmm. So yeah. What other what guitars do you use on the record?
Fair bit of a kind of a Strat copper made by Strat made by Greg Fryer,
mm-hmm.
of the guitar series in Brookvale, which for a few years now I've had another Australian builder, Rod McQueen of Hurstville in Sydney,
mm-hmm.
built pickups called Slider. For some reason, he's got quite a few variety of pickups, and they're great. They're really good, unbelievable bottom end out.
Yeah.
So a Fryer Strat with Rod McQueen Rod McQueen Slider pickups,
mm-hmm.
and then I know he's got a few models. I couldn't tell you specifically what mine are. But they're not super high gain. It's more about, you know, getting a tone rather than gain. There's a MIJ Gresh Falcon, White Falcon.
Nice.
Which I actually replaced the pickups with Seymour Duncan's Diner. Replace the pickups with Seymour Duncan's version of those.
Yeah, the
Dynasonics.
Yeah.
Which definitely made a big difference.
Yeah, I actually do Seymour Duncan's social media all the way from Australia. Right. Yeah, so I know those pickups well.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else? This is one of the other main, probably main guitars, is the Telecaster. I don't know, just great sounding Tele, which is a bit of a mongrel.
Yeah.
It's something that they put together for me in the late 70s with a Schecter African walnut body, which weighs a ton.
Wow.
And Rock Repairs were the Luthiers at the time. Had this 68 Telecaster neck lying around, and it felt really great. I said, "Oh, can I buy that?" And it was at the time when Schecter spare parts were coming out.
Mm.
So I bought myself and put that on. And it's had a variety of pickups on it, but it's a interesting guitar. You'd think for such a solid piece of wood, it'd be maybe top end, very toppy and thin, but it roars, and it's just never seems to draw comments of how people just love it. It just roars is the word people say.
Yeah.
just really warm, solid, roaring kind of throaty sound.
Nice.
And that's just got a bit of people say, "Oh, fuck, what are you doing with those in there?"
There's
a pair of EMGs in there.
Oh, yeah? Wow. Yeah. So I notice you are touring a hell of a lot this year. Talk us through that. You're doing, some overseas shows? You're doing a regional acoustic tour?
I've just finished a couple of gigs. Well, I played the Enmore last week,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely fantastic. And the Adelaide 500 went off.
Yeah.
I'm just concentrating on promoting the album, which comes out tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
March 9. And my next lot of gigs are a couple of weeks worth of solo acoustic, a couple in Germany, some in the UK, and one in Ireland. Then I'll come back and rehearse up for to showcase the album.
Yeah.
With a 7-piece band.
Cool.
Beginning this about 6 weekends in a row or something, beginning of late June.
Mm.
Just a pair of gigs each weekend.
Yeah.
Taking very little time off, and then just head out and do a fairly extensive regional solo acoustic thing, adding new songs to that show. I did that a couple of years ago. Theatres. It's just fantastic. Just a great experience, a great place to move to, to get out of the pubs and bars and chatty, noisy rooms and get into the theatres seem to command a certain amount of reverence where people just sit and listen. They don't sit and listen and chat.
Yeah.
I really like that. I'm going back to that and doing fairly extensional regional stuff there, which kind of takes me through to the end of the year, pretty much.
Yeah.
Then we'll see what happens in 2019.
Cool. Well, that looks like our time up, so thanks for the chat. It's been great to talk again, and I'll make sure I catch you in Melbourne.
All right, mate, no worries. Thank you.
Cool. Catch you soon.
Cheers, bye.
See ya.